In today's episode, we are discussing what is one of the most frustrating things you've had to overcome in music. You know, music isn't always easy. I'm gonna dive in today to discover frustrating things. Here we go.
Hey there, music makers. I'm Hayes Griffin.
And I'm Magnus Sedlund.
And welcome to the Mandolin Secrets podcast, a show where we take a deeper look at what's happening in the world of mandolin secrets. Each episode, we'll tackle our questions of the week, unpack the latest Mandolin Secrets lessons, and answer your questions about mandolin, guitar, and all things music. In this week's episode, we'll be discussing... what is one of the most frustrating things you've had to overcome in music, and how did you do it? What does your practice routine look like right now? And what type of pick do you prefer, and why? Before we get into all that, though, be sure to head to mandolinsecrets.com/podcast to sign up for reminders about our upcoming episodes. Just search Mandolin Secrets Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to get updates when we release new content.
All right, and I'm actually curious to dive into this question. What is the most frustrating things you had to overcome in music, and how do you do it? And to be honest, it's hard for me to pick out one single thing, but I have a few things that I would like to share. How about you, Hayes? Is there one most frustrating thing, or what is it like?
I would say that there's definitely like a top three for me. You know, it's like you said, it's hard to pick out one, but you've actually been with me for the journey on one of the most frustrating points related to right hand technique and stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely where I'm at too.
Mm. And I guess the follow-up is, how did you overcome it, and how did you do it, sort of, to get past it?
Yeah.
Or
are
you past it, or you're stuck with it?
Yeah, I guess to go a little deeper into it, it was about 3 years ago I got really interested, or like my interest was revitalized in improving my like speed technique on mandolin and guitar. And I just kept thinking, I'm like, there are so many people I know that just seem to be like regular people that can play 140 to 160 beats per minute, and I can't do it. But there must be something obvious or simple that I'm missing to get this. And that was frustrating. I mean, we're talking about, I've been playing guitar since I was 8. I was made aware of speed playing around the age of 16. I'm 36 now. So I guess 20 years of not knowing, you know, what to do with this.
Yeah.
But you've been with me, like I said, for kind of the most crucial points of that journey. So if we get to the how did I overcome the speed technique thing, I feel like there were two things. One of them was an awareness of right hand anatomy that was provided by a Troy Grady video on YouTube. That one really like mentally unlocked something for me. And then the second thing that helped me kind of, I'll say overcome the issue, but I still feel like I'm on this path. I still feel like I'm honing this skill. But another thing that really helped me unlock that and be able to practice this skill every day was mindfulness training and like body awareness and things like that. I feel like that was a huge component missing from my musical practice in general, not just like this specific technique, but
it kind of makes sense to me, because also the way I see it, it's difficult to kind of push through to play faster.
Yeah.
Because it's if we're starting to push through, it's sort of we're almost putting obstacles for ourselves how to get there.
You have to let go, actually, to play faster, right? Not push. It's this weird inverse relationship like that.
Yeah. Well, I can also relate to that a lot. And for me, it's been this thing accepting that I don't necessarily have to play so cleanly. That has improved my speed, and I know this is not one of my strengths, and it's not like something that I'm I haven't really cracked the code to play fast and cleanly, but so for me, it's like just accepting that fast is enough for me at the moment.
I think I'm with you on that one. Fast and clean, that's, you know, that's a bit much right now.
Well, I think you definitely further along on that than me, but that's interesting. And I think also for people listening to it, just the fact that you're actually revealing there that when you were 16, the speed playing was in your awareness, and it took like 20 years and it's still something. So it's just a reminder of like when we're into what we are doing, being a music maker, I mean, it's, things can take time to really pass through, and it's not about like checking things off the list, skills, or it's like a continuous work, sort of.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's, to me, the kind of analogy or the meta, what do I want to say, the kind of connection to mindfulness training is very analogous between like speed playing, because mindfulness training is like never over, you know.
No, there's no
end to that. It's more about like the continuous cultivation.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So speed is definitely at least one of those things for me right now. Maybe it's not for Chris Thiele or Jacob Jolliffe, but
no, of course. I mean, it's probably different things for all players, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing, wouldn't say the most frustrating things that I have to overcome, but just accepting that I can't do everything that I want to do. And I mean, in terms of all the instruments that I want to play, all the genres I want to play, all the bands that I want to be in, all the concerts I want to play, all the tunes I want to learn. We either have to choose consciously or let circumstances choose for us. But that is actually, I think, my biggest frustration, that it's being somehow limited in space and time.
Yeah, you know. It's not like you thought it was when you were a kid or starting out with this stuff. It seems like you've got all this time to like do everything, right? You know, and then
yeah,
at least for me.
And at least, I mean, especially if I want to get to the level where I want to be at, taking my mandolin playing as an example, I've kind of had to sacrifice other parts of my music making ambitions. And that is that has been, but also, of course, once I think it's, I feel like in the later years that I'm sort of have kind of realized it even more with playing this yes and no game. If I'm saying yes to something, I'm automatically saying no to something else, and the other way around, if I'm saying no to something, closing one door, I'm automatically saying yes to something else. So just be, and I guess some people can maybe relate to it, some people can't relate to it at all, but I guess it's just a bit of my personality that I think I can do more than I actually can. I want to do more than I actually am capable of. So it's been, and for me, it's been also just the fact that in the later years, I've sold away few instruments than that I, it's like same time as I'm selling my instrument, I'm, to name a few, I sold a Citroen, I've sold my electric guitar, my Stratocaster, I sold my guitar banjo. Well, but at this, in the same time as I'm like have let go of these instruments, it's also been like putting in an end to a project that I had, an ongoing project. So it's been beneficial for my mandolin playing, yes, but it's also been a frustrating and hard thing for me to realize that, okay, here goes the Jimi Hendrix dream, you know.
Yeah, I totally get that, man. Yeah, and you're talking to a guy like who's got, you know, 40 guitars in the rack back here that I barely use sometimes, you know, but I relate to it, you know. It's a, you know, I'm not going to be Yngwie Malmsteen anymore, but maybe I can be a good, you know, Hayes Griffin.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's not that, I mean, some people also have the ability to do a lot of different things with a very high level, but I realized that I'm not particularly good at that.
Yeah.
Still, I think, like, I like being a broad musician. That is one of my strengths. But still, it's you can hear I don't even have my mind up totally wrapped up around this question, but it's a frustrating thing that it comes up now that we're bringing the topic.
Yeah, I think this is a great topic of discussion though, because a lot of people can relate to that if they've been playing music for a while, you know. And something I hear you say, and tell me if this is incorrect, but it seems like over time what you've decided to do is take this broad attitude toward music that you kind of have and apply it to genre on one instrument, maybe, you know, like you play a broad variety of styles on the one instrument as opposed to playing ton of different instruments and ton of different styles and all that kind of stuff, right?
That's pretty much, that's spot on, I think. And so as I were closing the door to this other paths, sort of rooms, I've been also been able to be more focused on this, more putting a tighter framework to my what I'm actually spending my time on.
Yeah,
and it's also it is, and I think you said something that I mean, when I were younger, I didn't realize this. So it's the sort of thing that, well, I passed my 40s and I'm kind of starting to realize that, well, yeah, I'm not, but it's an interesting thing. Did anyone like in the group because we asked the question to the community, is there any specific coming from them that we want to share?
Yeah, there were some interesting kind of problems that people were having. A lot of them were like physical things people were talking about, you know, like not being able to master, you know, the pinky comes up quite a bit, you know, like I think one of the most frustrating thing, especially in mandolin world, is being able to make a chop chord, right? And that stretch that can be required of the pinky. I saw that come up three times. Carl Planting said it. Patrick Dugan says it. David says he had an injury to his pinky that kind of left it unusable on the mandolin, you know.
And I can really see that being a challenge, especially for people being injured or having this, I can't even pronounce it, but they are arthritis. Nah, I can't.
Arthritis.
I mean, that people are losing some of their ability. That must be really frustrating.
Yeah. I think that's, some people said too, that as they feel themselves aging, it definitely gets harder. Another interesting one that Dale put out in the community was an interesting challenge that he had, or frustrating challenge was keeping himself from speeding up. So playing in time and
rushing
rushing the tempo. And I think that's a relatable one that I've honestly seen in a lot of my students.
Mm.
You know, I'm a big metronome guy, you know. But I think I can understand why that would be frustrating. I remember feeling this as a teenager before I like practiced with a metronome regularly. Mm. If you're feeling that tempo slide and you're ending a tune in a different spot than other people, like that's makes the music making less enjoyable, right?
Absolutely. And that is also one of the big challenges that I felt sort of I've overcome it, but the timing issue, and I played with musicians that had a better timing than me, better, more evolved, more improved timing than me. So, and it was a tough, well, we talked about it before, but it's a tough thing to realize that your timing isn't where it should be. But but it's, for me, it's been like, I would say metronome practice has been the way to overcome it, really.
Yeah, it's a... The metronome doesn't lie.
it doesn't lie. No.
We can trick ourselves into thinking we're playing in time, but the metronome doesn't lie, man.
No, it doesn't. I want to play back one of my latest tutorials that I put out. It's a Swedish traditional dance tune called Hultkläppens Amol Polska. So I included like a three-part arrangement to the Academy with a melody. I'm actually playing here with my friend, the fiddle player Lena Jonsson. And then I've added a harmony and a bass line to it.
Great.
It's, yeah, so I want to play it back to the here so we can have a listen to it. And yeah, of course, there is complete tutorials for this. Now it's just a playthrough of the three-part arrangement, but here it comes.
1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3.
Yes, there we got it. And as we're listening to it, one thing actually strikes me. I'm not sure if there is any other recordings like this with the three mandolins playing a Swedish fiddle tune. I haven't heard it, and I think I would have heard it if there was someone.
Something tells me, the preeminent Swedish mandolin scholar would know about this if it existed.
Yeah. But this music is really played on fiddles in the tradition, and this harmony that I'm playing to, that is sort of the way to back up another fiddle playing it. So it's very like fiddle idiomatic this way. And then there, of course, the octa mandolin. There it's almost like it's an it's like a teaching part almost, because I'm playing this very like one dum dum. I'm playing like one and three, and that is for someone that is also kind of simplifying the rhythm so that it's, because this, it's for someone that have not been into this style, it's may even be a little bit difficult to actually hear the 3-4 meter here, but with this bass line I think it gets, well, easier to understand the music
for sure, at least to my ears as someone who's not used to that, the sound of those types of melodies and song forms. It's easier for me to follow, because I know, you know, sometimes we've talked about this in the past, I get lost in the time signature, because I think oftentimes in Swedish traditional tunes, like the octave mandolin or the cittern or whatever's playing underneath, will play like these very syncopated counterpoint kind of lines to the melody, right? That maybe don't exactly mark the 3-4 all the time. But
exactly. So, but I think it sounds good, but also as a teaching purpose, it's right there.
Yeah.
Cool. And for, I recommend people check it out. Complete tutorials in the Academy. I did see we had a gear question, and why not go just quickly?
Absolutely.
Go do that one.
No, so I think
I did see the question, what time of pick do you prefer and why? Starting with you, Hayes.
Yeah. So right now, just because of the consistency of it, I use a Blue Chip TAD50, which is pretty much the same size as the pick you use.
Yes.
A large triangular shape, 50 thousandths of an inch, which I think is, you know, like what, 1.27 millimeters or something like that. So almost like 1.3, I think.
I thought it were a bit thicker 50, yeah. But maybe it's
50 thousandths of an inch, I just looked it up, is 1.27 millimeters. That's what pick is. I kind of fluctuate back and forth. Like I really enjoy like Wagon and Hensa picks. But sometimes they're hard to get, and I wear them out really quickly. So the Blue Chip
stays.
It's very consistent.
Yeah. Okay, you can actually hold it to the camera, because I believe this, there will be a video replay for some of the views.
Yeah, so Blue Chip TAD50. I'll put it on my bald head so you can see against the background.
Cool, I'm also holding up. For my mandolin playing, I'm using this Hensa pick. This is 1.4 millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And got my signature on it also. So, and I think the questions, why I prefer this one, I kind of like the pick with a symmetrical shape, meaning I can turn it, it doesn't matter in what way I'm holding it.
Yeah.
And this big triangular, I think it's because, you know, the more pointy your pick is, the more it gets one kind of character, and the more rounder it is, it's another kind of character. It affects the tone. And I think this one is sort of, it's enough, there's enough edge to it, but not too edgy and not too round. So it's I like the shape.
It's the perfect Swedish pick, right? Melon pick, right? You know, it's the middle pick.
It's the middle pick. And also this thickness, 1.4, seems to suit me quite well. I kind of actually using, for my guitar playing, I'm using the same shape and same thickness, but another material that is a little bit softer.
Yeah, that white Hensel material, the cream color.
Cream.
I really love that pick on the guitar. It does have a sweet tone.
It has, yeah. So, and well, we don't have to, I think, go over all the answers from the community, but this seems somehow to be kind of a lot of players in our community do either use my signature pick or many prefer like a blue ship this shape.
But yeah.
Then there's, of course, also some people that play, they like thinner pick or
like a smaller shape
picks. Smaller picks. But as a, and to be honest, I mean, I started using this shape when I saw Chris Thiele was using one. And yeah. I wonder if that's not, if he had used another shape, another thickness, I think so many of our mandolin players would use that shape and the others. So I think what he's using sort of dictates what we're, the rest of us is following in a little way.
I think that's correct. I mean, I mentioned Wagon picks a minute ago. Like, those are picks that I really like. The first one entered, you know, my right hand about 2 months after seeing that Chris Thiele used one. You know, it was became a standard in the community, I think, once he did that.
Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't make a U-turn and go for a really thin, light one. And
We'll
have to
change. I
mean,
he's on the blue chip these days. He's got the CT55, I think, is one pick that has his name on it. So it's like, it's kind of like mine, just a bit thicker, I think.
Yeah,
closer to your pick.
Yes, cool. So, but we also had one last question in the community. Let's see what the group has to say about it. How was the question stated?
So the question was, what does your practice routine look like right now? And there were a lot of joke answers to this one, because I think people somehow were feeling a bit, you know, self-conscious maybe about this one. Gail had a really great answer, though. She was saying that she starts out with closed position scales and arpeggios, trying to play them all over the fingerboard. And then she says she has some favorite exercises for tremolo, triplets, and other licks. Then after she gets through like technical practice, she plays with backing tracks for some of her favorite tunes.
Cool.
And I think practicing melodies and improvising and stuff like that. There are a few other people that were using books, you know. David in the Facebook community says he is using the Bluegrass Mandolin Method as kind of his practice guide, which is a pretty legendary book. But and then tons of people that were just like, yeah, I don't have a practice routine right now, you know.
Well, I guess it's still very essential to be reminded of this, that I think having a routine that it actually, even if it's, it can be super simple. Like, I start by playing whiskey before breakfast every time I pick it up, or whatever it can be. But just that, because every one of us, we have to show up for the mandolin or our instruments. Otherwise, we won't have any improvement. So having something that gets you going, and so you don't have to invent and ask yourself the question every day, what should I practice today, or what should I play today?
Absolutely, yeah. Having that system in place kind of just helps get you through that first question, like you're asking, you know. It's like you don't have to think about what you have to play, right?
No. And I think it was Sarah, I think, the other day, she said she's just playing she was using Irish jigs. She always started with playing some Irish jig. And I think, for me, playing a fiddle tune that we know kind of well, that is a perfect way for me to get started.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm actually working on some jazz music, but the same approach. I'm not starting to nail those chord changes that I cannot do yet. But I'm starting to just get it going with playing the head of the tune, the melody sort of, and working through some arpeggios over the chord changes. So it feels, well, it feels like unstressful to start with something that I'm pretty confident with.
Yeah, I think that's a good general guideline. I do the same in my own practice. I had a couple of teachers suggest that. I think, you know, it was kind of just like you described it. It's a good warm-up to play something that you're familiar with and that you know really well. Like, it just gets the fingers moving on the instruments, because we're all going to be a little, you know, maybe tight or something. Yeah. But my teacher, John McGann, kind of brought it up that if you play something that you know really well at the beginning of a practice session, mm-hmm. it sets you up mentally for success, because you started the practice on like a high note, on something that you can accomplish, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind as well. That
that is a very good reason for doing it.
Yeah.
Because doing your practice with the other thought in mind that, oh, I can't really do this, it's not going to serve us that well.
No, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy if mm-hmm. you do that.
Yeah. Well, I think, they're in the academy. There is a webinar all together, how to optimize your practice. I can't really summarize the whole webinar quickly, but I want like the practice routine to be really simple and also evolving, so you can change things around pretty much. I'm not saying this may not work for everyone, but for me it works really well to kind of categorize things into repertoire or this other thing that I call craft training. Yes. It can be the technique, I try to at least touch upon both areas for both of my practice sessions, and I can. So that's really well. I'm going to read the question out loud again. What does your practice routine look like right now? So I can almost answer that question in the same way as for the last couple of years, because mm-hmm. my practice routine, as I said, normally starting by playing a melody that I know, and I can also approach it differently depending on what I'm searching. I can try to actually play it fast if it's speed that I'm playing, but still, or I can just play it all like closed position, not using an open strings if I want to work on the fretboard a little bit more challenging for the fretting, and that is probably my favorite thing to start with, playing a fiddle tune or a jazz melody, like closed position, just as relaxed as I can do it. And then maybe adding a little bit of craft training, as I said, running some arpeggios, outlining chord changes, or if it's let's say I'm playing another tune that I recently published, Lonesome Moonlight Waltz. I might start with a melody, then I might practice some tremolo thing. And, it sounds... But the thing is, doing that day after week after week, month after month, years after year, it's sort of, that is my recipe for what I want to achieve. And I think it's... Well, simplicity is my answer to it.
Yeah, I would mm-hmm. agree with you on that. And mm-hmm. My routine is very similar, I think, in terms of the simplicity of it and the dynamic nature of it. I think that's something that you brought up that really resonated with me about my practice routine right now. It's something mm-hmm. that no matter what material I have to choose or work through, the practice routine is set up for it, you know.
That's golden to have it in place, and I really hope people can find it. So check out that webinar and you will get some ideas at least.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's it. Talking about some frustrating things in music and what picks we prefer, some Swedish fiddle tune music and things that can, like, hopefully help someone in the practice routine. Put up a practice routine. I think, well, I want to end the whole episode with something that I heard from one of the community members, Louis Eads. He said he fingers to the strings every day. Fingers on the strings every day. Yep. That's a simple motto as that. And but with that attitude, there's no, well, the limit to where we can end up.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else you want to say, Hayes, before wrapping things up?
No, I think that about wraps it up for this episode, but for all you out there, if you're interested in keeping up with the show, head to mandolinsecrets.com/podcast for more information. For the episodes, we always have links and a little description, too, if there's anything that we mention in there. So maybe you'll find that useful. But what do you have, my friend?
No, nothing else, but I just want a friendly reminder to everyone, always be a music maker. Take care.
Peace.